Hello and welcome to the Dance Futures podcast, the podcast that discusses dance as a way of life with people who've made it central to theirs. I'm your host, Dr. Ruth Pepybridge, professional dance geek. And this month I had the pleasure of speaking to two of my dance and choreography graduates from Falmouth University, Boone Wong-Paisan and Kira Sanderson. And the reason it's such a treat is obviously the moment where you as a teacher or facilitator get to learn from your students is always a really precious one, and hopefully that is happening throughout education, this kind of reciprocal exchange of learning and respect. But there is something wonderful about seeing graduates who've kind of flown the nest and are making their way as artists in the world. Now, one of the things that happened during this conversation is that we stopped recording and then continued chatting. And I feel like one of the really important key points was made about their kind of internationalism. So Boone spoke about how he now feels kind of almost more at home in England and the UK and in France, where they're currently working with Duckbill Company, than he does in Thailand, and spoke about this concept of the international body that he kind of feels he's now inhabiting. And I think both Boone and Kira speak about traveling across these borders and spending time apart and together, and what their connection means and their connection to others. And so we riff on that theme of connection, but I think I really wanted to also highlight this concept of the international body and the way that this can resonate with our political climate around how we create home where our bodies are and construct our identities through our relationship to different places and spaces and people, and that that can be as much a part of us as the places that we're born in. So I really hope you enjoy this roundtable with Boone and Kira, and obviously regular contributor Luca Vaccari joined us as well. Hello, welcome to the Dance Futures podcast. We have a graduate special this month for the month of February, and I am super excited to talk to two graduates from the dance and choreography course at Falmouth, which is also where I teach. So it's super special for me to be able to hear a bit more about what these two have been up to. I'm going to be chatting with Kira Sanderson and Boone Wong-Paisan, and obviously Luca Vaccari is also joining us from the props cupboard in Frankfurt. Luca, you're waving. That doesn't work on a podcast.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I have to remember to keep it verbal.
Verbal cues. And Kira and Boone, where are you at the moment?
We are in Chalamont in France, about to start a residency with Duckbill Company for their new creation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, exciting. Yeah. So I'd love to just hear a little bit about life post-graduation. And I guess that's quite a big, in some ways it's quite a big topic, but obviously we're focusing on you guys as dancers, movers, makers. And I know we had a little chat beforehand about this thing of like, who, you know, this question of like, who am I to have anything to share or something? But I guess it's to say that for me, this is so lovely. It's a moment where I get to kind of learn from my past students, because you're out there doing it. You're in the real world doing it. And that's also super exciting for other people who are studying dance or about to graduate to kind of hear about. So could you tell me a bit about, can you cast your mind back to like actually graduating and then next steps and how that felt, or what you did to sort of start your practice, as it were, evolving? Can you Kira, you're like smiling.
it's dark times back then. It feels, because I graduated at a strange time. It was not the COVID year, but the one after, so things were still slightly different to a typical okay, you're off in the real world. There wasn't a great sense of closure from studying and training. And I think that sets up the initial putting yourself out there, and how do I actually go about this in a slightly different way? There's lots of confusion, and it does feel like you've sort of just been plopped, you know, solo, and like, okay, off you go.
Yeah.
And it can be really scary and really hard. There's times that I really remember one time I went to my first like pro level dance class just after graduating, and I felt so out of my depths and so like, oh god, these dancers from all over the UK are here and they're so much better than me and I can't keep up and da da da. And it was a real point of like, okay, this is either where I give up and do like full-time cafe work or flip it and try and like keep pushing. Like, there's been so many times like that, and there still will be, I know there will be.
Yeah, that's it's really valuable to hear that though, I think, as well, because it probably resonates. I can see Luca and Boone are both sort of nodding away a bit, because you've had such a structure, haven't you, when you're in training, and everything kind of laid out for you, and collaborators just there, you know, and these aims and the collaborators, the people around you. And I think, yeah, the context of the pandemic, obviously, Kira, that's really relevant. So was it 2020 that you graduated?
2021.
And Boone, you graduated in the year before that then? You 2020.
I graduated in 2019. So 19. 2 years.
Okay, yeah. So that's even longer for you to cast your mind back. But did you have already a network, a kind of dance network, to go back to?
I think yes and no. I had some people that I knew and I have moved with during my times of studying at university. And I think that led to some more future opportunities to work with a local company in Thailand. So for me, I think jumping from graduation to work right away was not as, I guess, scary. It was quite smooth. However, I think with what Kira's just said, and I feel like all of us can relate to, is the experiences outside of a controlled environment like university are very spontaneous. And I found that to be very, very difficult for myself. And I think it was quite challenging, but at the same time, I also understood that that's where you would probably grow and mature the most as a professional. Mm-hmm. And so in many ways, I was very thankful for that experience. But at the same time, it was also very new, I think. Everything starts from zero again after you graduate. So I think that was the main challenge for me. However, it's also been very good equally as well.
Yeah. And that starting from zero, that sense of starting from zero, I guess I'm curious about it as a, also as a kind of with training and with sort of keeping in your bodies. And like, how have you managed to sort of do that outside of formal education?
It's a struggle. For me, it was quite a struggle from having quite a turbulent time throughout training with my relationship to movement and that ever changing, to then being a professional and being, what does it mean to sort of air quote be a dancer or feel like a dancer? You know, do you have to like physically practice every day, or is it more outside of physical practice? How do you maintain that? What if you lose it, you know, if you don't use it? And there's so many things around that, and the constant of feeling like you can't do enough, you know, you da da da. But then this is a thing that I'm still like learning to deal with and let it sit right in my body, and trusting my body that it has been through all of this stuff and it has practiced and refined certain things, and knowing that that's the, trusting that, it's actually really helping to speak to other professionals in the field that maybe have been in it a bit longer or have had similar experiences, especially relating to movement, that seeing them be so comfortable and available in their body, it's like, it's fine. Even if I don't train for like a few weeks or a few months, I know that my body is available for this. And I think it's more of a mental thing than a physical thing.
I agree. I think actually that's a really good question, because personally for me, I found the physical shift from training or from university to the professional world not to be the hardest part. Mm-hmm. However, for me, the part that I felt was very hard to apply was to unapologetically be yourself at every situation you're given. And not in the way to, yes, and not in the way to be in a room to impress someone or to boast about yourself, but more so just to be yourself while you have the opportunity to really express how you enjoy doing something. For example, I think if you were in a technique class, you can still do it with as much effort and, I guess, passion as you did while you were studying. However, because you're in a professional setting and it can make you nervous and anxious, I feel like that's the point where I feel it's hard to find the courage to be yourself, but in a bigger pond, I guess you could say.
Yeah. No, that really makes sense. Mm-hmm. I think I feel like that's still a thing for me, even as I get older, the thing of walking into a space and being like, I'm going to work intelligently for myself and totally focus on what I need from this. And I say that sounds sort of slightly mercenary and like I don't care about the other people in the room. Obviously, it depends on the context. If it's a kind of a thing where you're working very, I don't care about you. If you're working with other people, if you're working with other people, you have a different focus, obviously, and open to that collaboration. But I think maturing partly as a person and as a dancer sometimes also means recognizing that you are, even in technique, always finding your own pathway through something, and that the more you can focus on that rather than, you know, the standard bearers of the other people in the space or the different, not even levels in a hierarchical sense, but different kind of points of entry that everybody has, the deeper you can then go for yourself, right? Like that's a real thing. So yeah,
I think understanding that and accepting that this kind of, if we use like a graph, like a how, again, air quotes, good of a dancer or mature of a dancer you are, it's not this upwards thing. It's a constant dip and rise and fall. It's not something that you can measure. And I think getting that sort of image out of my head of I just need to get better and better and better in this sense, as soon as I just wipe away the graph, I feel immediately calmer. I'm just like, I am who I am today and I'm where I am at today because of the experiences I've had. And I think it goes to trust and just, having faith in the experiences that you solely as an individual have had. And
I think that's a lovely way of putting it, the idea of sort of trusting what's there. And those layers and how you can access them in different contexts and different ways. So, you know, even if you're not the fittest you've ever been, there might still be a story that you have to tell and certain sensibilities that you've got because of the kinds of trainings and practices you've been involved in that you can still kind of access in your unique way. I think it's really important. Otherwise, we get into that kind of grasping mentality, don't you? Like you say, of the sort of the scale of the moving up endlessly, which I associate also with sort of capitalism and progress, and there's that idea, isn't there, of a kind of widening circle of life. I don't know if you know that analogy, rather than a kind of straight line that we're progressing up, that it's like a circle that's getting wider, and so we're filling it, but it's not necessarily about that kind of progression. That's a really helpful idea.
Luca, it reminds me of
No, it's fine. No, I want to hear. Let's hear what it reminds you of. I'm just aware that Luca's nodding away and wanted to hear what he had to say.
Because I recently read Emmeline Clade's book, Falling Through Dancing Life. Great. So it reminds me of what they spoke about in the book of this eye vertical standing and this, you know, relating it to capitalism and dance training, like classical dance training is this upright type thing, when horizontal falling, lying down on the floor is more accurate.
Resisting some of those pressures. And Kira, that makes me so happy that you've just read a dance book. Can you imagine my little, I'm doing my little geek, my little happy, happy dance geek dance. I'm like, woo, graduates, I'm still reading. Yes. Luca, can I bring you in? Any thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's just, for me, the main thing is remembering, and I'm telling myself this constantly at the moment, that there aren't any rule books to how everybody's bodies work. Everyone has a different body and a different mind to train with. So and in the age of social media, it's so easy to make these comparisons between other people and how they're training and what they choose to present online. And we know that that's always like a very one-dimensional perspective of any aspect of someone's life, but particularly when we use social media for spreading our creative endeavors, then when we see other people training, there's always that kind of, I should be doing that, I should be able to do that, you know, I need to step up my game, blah blah blah, blah. But you know, these rules always feel kind of like they're a leftover from having our very scheduled, like 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. uni day of, you know, you do two classes in the morning and then you have a creative workshop, and then that, unless you are doing that full time, it's very difficult to do that once you leave that kind of institutionalized scheduling of your day.
I'm really glad you brought up the point about social media, because as a because I obviously keep up with quite a lot of what graduates might be doing through social media. And obviously some people have a more active presence than others, which isn't always necessarily representative of the reality of what's going on. But I am curious, Boone and Kira, because you feel quite active on there, out in the ether. thinking about Instagram, and Boone also some amazing reels that I've seen that you've made and things like that, and I'm just wondering about your relationship to that and how you manage that, I guess, personally and professionally, to have that presence, and what it is that you're thinking about putting out into the world in that, you know. And I think it'd be useful for people to hear, because it's such a it's a sort of strange bind that we're in as artists in relation to social media, isn't it? And how you choose to interact with that. So it'd just be interesting to hear your thoughts on that.
I'm glad the social media situation was brought up as well. because I definitely feel like since I graduated, my relationship to it has changed a lot. I started, the comparison and the pressure that Luca was speaking about was really prominent immediately after I started working professionally. And I think I got very sort of caught up and really into the comparison rabbit hole. But then as soon as I started to sort of accept and amend my relationship to it by not making, like when we're talking about reels and posts and stuff like that, I feel like Boone can actually say more about this, because there's a huge difference in how UK artists use Instagram, for instance, and Thailand.
I think I think for me, while I was studying or training, I didn't really feel comfortable is the right word, to upload things onto my social media. However, when I found myself back at home in Thailand, I realized that we're a very social media based dance community. And I think that comes from the strong fact that I think I can confidently say that about 95% of the movers in Thailand are more street dance based. And
Okay,
so,
interesting.
Yes. And so what that means is within the country, there's so much teaching going on, and we have such a big studio culture, I guess you can say, that's that makes the community very different. And so because the studio culture is very prominent or dominant, a lot of the marketing that you have to do has to come from uploading your class content or anything that requires you to move around on video that could be seen by everyone, as a way to, I guess, to promote what you're doing. And so I found that to be very, very difficult because if I'm completely honest, I feel like that goes against some of my own values as someone who really likes to create. I think when you have to post or upload things for other people, there comes a point where you find yourself over compromising your creativity or the things that you like in order for someone else to understand it better. And to me, that's not an issue. However, when that becomes the more, I guess you can say, thing that you focus about when you use your social media, it can become quite draining. I think I found myself many times to be thinking more about how many people will see something that I put out there online rather than whether I'm proud of what I put out there, because I feel like that's something that I've created for myself. And so I always find that balance to be very, very difficult. However, at the same time, I realize that in myself that those two are very different sides of the spectrum. And I think if I just viewed my social media as a gateway to use it as an educational purpose, but also as a way to communicate to the mass audience, then I thought maybe it might be interesting to creatively find a way to express myself, but still in a way that many people can approach and get into what I like making. So as a way to meet them in the middle, rather than to always make stuff and to post things for everyone, I think there's a way to use social media as a communication tool. And I think that's, if it's used well, it can become quite effective and actually very useful for a whole community and not just yourself.
That's so interesting to hear about the context of Thailand and that sort of, the way that it interacts with our with the dance culture being quite different to maybe how we might experience it here. And yeah, I say it certainly feels like you've found an effective way to share things that feel, I mean, only knowing you as a mover from having you studying at Falmouth, I feel like it feels like it has integrity, you know, to who you are as a mover and practitioner. But yeah, it's quite a lot to navigate, isn't it? It's another whole layer. When you're already navigating kind of just how to be in the professional world as graduates, I think it's really important to point out, as you say, the necessity of sort of stepping back and thinking, really reflecting on, you know, how it's serving you and what are the kinds of thought processes that it's bringing up and how helpful is that to you as an artist, and just being mindful of that. It's such a, I could wang on about that. I tell you, the whole, I use it in a very playful way these days, but the whole personal professional kind of crossover of social media as well, it's absolute minefield. Anyway, we will be posting like mad on the Dance Futures Instagram after this. We're gonna be Kira and Boone all over it, just so you know.
Creative solutions.
Yeah, exactly.
Is what social media needs.
I think, well, we've touched on it. I mean, I guess it would be great to hear Kira, you spoke about that thing again. We had the air quotes about like feeling like a dancer, and that's kind of come up quite a lot, hasn't it, Luca, in previous conversations as well. This thing of like, when do I get to say, like, at what point am I like, yes, I'm a dancer, and I can feel, you know, feel like I really can really own that title. Or maybe it's artist that you choose. But similarly, that kind of getting rid of that imposter syndrome, or I'm just wondering that, like, do you feel like we all have that for the rest of our lives? I'll just say that now, flag that. Again, your relationship to it can change. Hello, I'm Dr. Krakowicz, massive imposter syndrome. But yeah, your relationship to it can change. So I'm not saying that, you know, that it's a necessary has to be a resolved thing, but do you feel like there's a moment or a project or, you know, and I would love to hear more about the specific things you're involved in, but do you feel like there's a moment or a project where you could kind of go, oh yeah, actually I feel more like I can own that now, or in this moment or in this context? Can you think of anything?
Yeah, I think those moments are very fleeting for me. I feel like I'm a professional imposter. Even the opportunity to work with this company still hasn't really sunk in for me, or Boone really. Mm-hmm. It's like we can't quite grasp the whole idea of it. Like, we're in another country and we're working as dancers and interpreters, and it's something that we never really thought would happen, especially this early on. So it's almost as like a defense we've kind of blocked off, or at least I have. I've blocked it off and I'm just like, okay, I'm just here and I'm just doing my thing. I'm just being my little self. And yeah, I feel like a total imposter. But not in a necessarily negative way, I think.
Okay.
Imposter can bring about its own little movements of how you can fiddle through something and just rely on the process and just trust it a bit. But yeah, I've always kind of struggled with the going back to kind of feeling like a dancer. Mm. I've always struggled with like naming myself, labeling myself in a way, like even writing CVs or writing emails like, hello, my name is Kira, I'm a dancer, dance artist, choreographer, mover, based in Leicester. And it's kind of, I don't know what resonates. It probably changes. I mean, I like the word interpreter. That's a good word.
Nice.
I'm an interpreter. But yeah, it constantly fluctuates.
I think it's nice that it changes, I think. And it's useful, again, I think, for people to hear about how that, yeah, it's very different to walking into a job with a job title, isn't it? It's kind of like you're constantly shifting your perspectives and relationships and roles in terms of what you're doing, depending, because I know you teach as well, don't you, Boone? I think, do you? Yeah. You teach quite a lot as well. Kira, I've seen you doing teaching classes as well. So there's going to be very different roles that you're inhabiting, again, depending on the context that you find yourself in. So it's quite useful. I also love what you said about an imposter, like whether we can kind of occupy our imposter syndrome in a more useful way, that is almost like giving you permission to have a slightly different perspective on things. You know, a sort of like, you know, like looking at it from a slightly odd angle and not fully. I don't know. There's something interesting about that, I think.
Because it does have the sensation of feeling like you're looking from a third person's perspective, or you're outside of your body looking at a situation. Like, say if I'm in a studio with working on a creation and I'm not completely there, and yeah, it does have that sensation of slightly removed, and that can be quite a scary feeling and quite uncomfortable. But I suppose, yes, if you can flip it in a way of how can this be useful to have the benefit of almost being slightly removed and being quite aware slightly differently, I don't know if it could be.
Yeah,
it could be something more useful, or yeah, something less scary. I think not being afraid of that feeling is quite a powerful thing in itself.
Yeah, Definitely. I think there's something about the newness of, if you are new, like you say, you're sort of going, oh, I didn't expect this to happen so soon. That freshness, that keeps it very alive, right? Like, and hopefully that's there all the time if you're working in this field, that aliveness. But of course it can, that can get deadened a bit. So I think there's something really beautiful about acknowledging that in a more positive light. Can you tell us a little bit about the project? What is it? Are you allowed? Can you talk about it? I'm like,
I think so. I think the company want to kind of start speaking more about it. So I guess this will be a nice little teaser if anyone hasn't heard. But we are both working as, again, that thing, dancers or movement interpreters. For Duck Build Company. They are based in Lyon in France, by Grégoire Manez and Eloise Grastillo.
Yeah.
I'm probably butchering the pronunciation.
Don't worry, guys. we can put things in the show notes as well.
But yes, we are working on their new creation called Plantasia. And it's based off the album by Mort Garson, Mother Earth Plantasia. Made in 1976, very much a cult favorite and an album that has aged with nostalgia and has got more popular over time because of that. It's more about this ecological tale of we are caretakers of a museum that has just artificial plants, and it's in this universe where plants don't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of this absurd tale of childhood and remembering and nostalgia, and yes, a very absurd fairy tale. It's very, very cool, very interesting.
And how did you get that? Just again, just nuts and bolts. Was that an audition process that you did?
Well, I first met Grégoire and Eloise in Thailand, because they went to Thailand to do an internship with a company that I had worked for before.
Okay.
And Eloise reached out to me to meet up and just get to know each other, just because I think they thought that they were going to work with me. However, I left the company before they came to Thailand.
Okay.
And so we wanted to link up and network that way, I guess. Well, not really network. We just met up for a dinner.
Had hot pot.
Yeah. I went to watch the performance with the company because it was a full production called School of Ganesh, I think. And then we just got dinner afterwards. And I think we just really enjoyed talking to each other, sharing ideas. And I guess we found many things in common. And it was only until a few months later that they reached out to me and asked if I would be interested to be a part of their work. And
I mean, I'd call that
meeting each other.
I'd call that networking. Am I not allowed? Are we allowed to call that networking?
I think it's because it's definitely networking, but I think it's because I felt like meeting Greg and Eloise was much more of meeting a new friend, and I didn't feel like I was working with them, and I think that's why it came to the point where it is now.
Yeah.
Because they were just so easy to talk to. They're very professional, very charismatic, and just very funny. So
nice. Yeah. Well, that is perfect, because that leads me on to my connection theme, this idea around friendship and connection. I really liked what you said, Boone, about friendship, and that and networking has this feeling of sounding a bit too sort of business-like and cold sometimes, doesn't it? When essentially, though, it is also about, particularly in the arts, it is about connecting to people. That's all that networking really means. And as you know, I always like to bring a bit of somebody else's writing into the conversation. And I've been revisiting this book by Kay Tempest. Do you know the poet, Kay Tempest? It's called On Connection, and it's about creativity, and it was also written during the pandemic. Yeah, and it's a really beautiful small book that really speaks to the idea, the power of creative connection, really, I guess. And I suppose I wanted to bring this into the conversation also because I'm really aware of you two working together and having a connection and kind of how that feeds into and out of your work as artists and sort of navigating that as well. So I'm gonna read you a little bit. Now
Yay.
get comfy everybody. And then I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. So Kay writes, creativity is the ability to feel wonder and the desire to respond to what we find startling. Or more simply, creativity is any act of love, any act of making. It's usually applied to art making, but it can also be applied to anything you do that requires your focus, skill, and ingenuity. It takes creativity to dress well, for example, to parent, to paint a windowsill, to give someone you love your full attention. Connection is the feeling of landing in the present tense, fully immersed in whatever occupies you, paying close attention to the details of experience, characterized by an awareness of your minuteness in the scheme of things, a feeling of being absolutely located, right here, regardless of whether that right here is agitated or calm, joyous or painful. Creative connection is the use of creativity to access and feel connection and get yourself and those with you in the moment into a more connected space. So I really like this, what they write about the that I suppose that act of attention, giving your attention to something. And for me, dancing and movement is something definitely where I feel it allows me to be very, very present in a way that a lot of other things, my attention feels very scattered. And so that idea of connecting to yourself, but also others in that moment, whatever that kind of brings. And yeah, I wondered about how that resonated for you guys, and I suppose, yeah, like how you navigate a creative connection between you two as well.
Yeah, no, it's something again that I think kind of going back to the networking friendship blurriness that that is for me, it feels like the because Boone and I have been teaching classes together, and you know, we've naturally gone down this path. Both of us are movement practitioners, and because we have this connection, there's a sense that we want to help each other and push each other, and you know, what better way than to do things together? It was kind of like not even a thought, it just naturally happened. And one day we were teaching a class together in Bangkok twice a week for many, many weeks. And yeah, it can be quite a powerful thing, I think. Yeah, there's a lot in it that words are leaving me.
I think I forgot the question.
Well, I suppose it's just about reflecting on the theme of connection in your work, whether that's with Kira but and also with others, and that feeling of giving your full attention to something and whether that how that manifests, I guess, for you.
I think for me, I've never really given it a clear thought or attention that perhaps everything we're doing is a form of connection. I think it comes naturally to me. But at the same time, I'm also very aware of it because after every job, I guess you could say, after every job or session or meeting with new people, I feel that the most enjoyable part of what we get to do for a career is to simply expand the connection that we have. I think every time I've spoken to someone new, they always have something new in a different perspective to offer. And I think that's really important to have in this career because I think what we do is based on expanding our perspective of one single topic or many topics across the board. And I think that really shows in what you make or what comes out as the result of what you create. So I think I've never really thought about the connection. However, I am very aware that it is there. I think visually, I kind of just see it as this.
It feels quite unconscious to me, I think. There's like, it, for instance, if you're teaching a class, thinking about it now, a lot of the things I like to lead are connection-based or room-based and really using eye contact and being very aware. There's a lot of practice in that, being noticing, just noticing. And I suppose that's, it's just something that has really stayed with me since training. It's what I most enjoy doing, and it's what I quite like giving to other people, is that experience of finding that common ground with another person. And we all have that sense of common ground because we're all humans at the end of the day, regardless. And I think when you find that, like when there's those moments of everyone is breathing together and this like one organism is happening and you've all made it yourself, that's it, I don't know what to call it, but it's that moment that really it stirs something in me. It inspires me, and it's where I'm like, yes, I'm doing the right thing, I'm on the right path here. So it's really more of a part I give it credit for. I think,
yeah, I mean, I wish that we did have the visuals, because the way you were like moving your hands then and like really you know, like really evocative of that, like, yes, that's it kind of feeling. And I think, yeah, the quote that I read, it starts with this thing of the desire to respond to what we find startling. So like something that catches your attention and you're like, it's that thing. And it, you know, you don't necessarily have the precise language for it, but you have that desire to respond or to create from it and with it. As you say, it's that thing, you're like, oh, there it is, I can feel it in the room. Or, and also I think significant, you know, for me, connection in relation to the pandemic and dance and movement practice, obviously, is that was what was so lacking, was that experience, those experiences of connection and sort of friendship in the space, in these pockets of time that we used to share together. And suddenly that not being there, and then being so aware of how valuable and important it was to the form itself. So I think that's all really useful connections.
Because there's lots of different types of connection. I think there's obviously emotional and creative connection, but physical too. Like, we've all now experienced that lack of physical connection because of the pandemic, and Boone and I quite intensely spent like 2.5 years apart, also due to COVID, but also, you know, being from Thailand and being in the UK. I think I hold a lot of power in that. I think in that we know how important it is now. We don't take it for granted. So when there is physical connection, we are together. Like anyone, after coming out of the lockdown and the pandemic, it's even more, you know, it's like gold dust.
Yeah.
And I think there's so much in that.
Yeah, precious. Mm-hmm. And yeah, not to be taken for granted. Yeah, for sure. I've lost my thread. I'm like, Luca, do you want to add anything?
Yeah, I was just thinking about where I am in my post graduation journey and my current situation. And although I'm working full time as a dance teacher and a dance artist, most of my time is taken up by teaching dance, which is great, so I'm dancing a lot. But as a teacher, you don't necessarily get to interact with people in the same way that you do if you're a full participant in a class or in a workshop or in just a kind of dancer get together. And I think it's quite odd. I've been thinking about this a lot recently, that like I have full-time connection with people that want to be dancing, but it's not necessarily like quality connection. It's not like a deep, thoughtful, creative connection all the time. Quite often it's a very didactic, I'm the teacher, you're the student. If a class is only 50 minutes long, you can't necessarily build that intense creative connection in 50 minutes. Like, it's not something that can be rushed, and it's not something that can be forced with people who, you know, anyone needs time to kind of get into that headspace and that body space as well to find that connection. So it's just something that I've been thinking about a lot, and how I can kind of improve that in my current situation, I guess.
I think it's it's that thing, isn't it, of being able to create space for those things to take the time they need to take is sometimes hard when you're in an institutional context and certain things are mapped out for you, and so then there isn't that space around the edges of things to allow things to evolve in a slightly more organic way, perhaps. Kieran Boone, how long are you in France for? How long is that process? I was thinking about, even in any creative process, always has these limits on it, doesn't it, of sort of time and space. But when is the show meant to be ready?
So our premiere is in Lyon in May, on the 24th of May. We have 8 exciting shows. Even this imposter syndrome is coming back in, but we've got 8 shows in Lyon.
Roll with it.
I believe we also have 4 additional dates in Paris, in June, July. And then in July, we are shooting a cinema version of the piece in the south of France. So we're here until August. So it's a pretty long one. I was quite surprised.
Exciting.
But apparently, because speaking to people back in England, when I was saying what I was going to go off and do, they were like, wow, that's really long. Like, people are used to like plopping things together in like a couple of weeks and performing it. But then here, apparently, like speaking with Greg and Eloise, they're like, this is really short for France.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that is, again, there's a whole kind of cultural context of arts funding and the way that artists are valued in Europe as opposed to in the UK. France, there's some amazing schemes around, which is, you know, because they see artists as central to the kind of cultural life of the country in a way that means they are differently valued. And with that value comes time. Yeah. So,
yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, that's great. But no, so no UK shows though.
Not yet. I am trying to kind of cast my net and to see what possibilities there are for us to come to the UK.
It would be wonderful if you did. It would be wonderful. Otherwise, Luca, maybe we'll have to have a trip to Paris.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm down for that.
Yeah, get you out of that cupboard.
Yeah.
Do it.
All right, guys. Well, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for being the February edition and connecting with us. And we will be watching with interest all the next steps and linking to all the social media stuff that you're up to on the account so that people can follow along and see what you're doing. Thank you so much.
Oh,
thank you. Thank you both.
It's been so lovely to see your faces and speak again. So
very, very proud of you both.
Thank you.
Oh.
If you enjoyed this episode and you want to keep up with the social media antics of Boone and Kira, it's Kira P. Sanderson and at BooneMoveBKK on Instagram. And you can also follow along the company work as it's progressing, Plantasia, at duck_build_company. And I hope you have a good ending to your February and that your body feels good and gets to move plenty as we move a bit closer to the spring.